Hey, everybody, welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I am your co-host, Chris. As always, I'm joined by my brother and co-host, Rob. What's up, Rob?
I'm Rob 847 from the multiverse. I'm the one with a huge dong. I have to coil it.
Yeah, maybe in the quantum realm. It's about the nerdiest intro we've ever had.
It still had a dick joke, though.
Yeah, you gotta have that. Yeah. Coiled up dick. We are talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, one of the lower critically rated Marvel movies, maybe the lowest. Definitely the one with the stupidest title.
I kind of like the title.
I hated the title because it was sort of, to me, they tried to make this like a big epic almost. I mean, it was still silly, but there was more seriousness to it. Yeah. I just, Quantumania, it didn't mean anything. I just think they could have come up with something better than that.
I don't know. I maybe I've just embraced like the overly stupid title, like in the multiverse of madness. There's a lot of words in that.
Yeah, that's multiverse, a long one.
But I'm still like, I kind of like that. It's silly and fun.
All right. I get this is a movie that has had a real weird reception. It made some pretty good money. I don't think it did as much as they wanted it to, but it did just fine. Yeah. At least the first week, and then I think it dropped off really sharply the second week.
I think it just got so much bad word of mouth that, yeah. And I don't know if Marvel, what am I trying to say? Marvel fatigue is kind of kicked in. And I think Kevin Feige said as much, like, we're putting out 17 billion TV shows every year and releasing so many movies that I think we're going to scale back a little bit, which I think is good.
I think it is good. I mean, I enjoy what they put out. You know, I like having a lot of content, but I mean, they're definitely showing some cracks in the armor.
Yeah.
What do you think, just general overview, especially compared to the critical reception, do you think it deserved the hammering it got? Did you think it was way better? What was your general impression?
I went in maybe, I think I saw it maybe a week after it came out. So I had heard all the hubbub of, you know, low audience scores and low critical scores. So maybe I had tempered expectations. I think from a critical standpoint, it falls apart and just doesn't work on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. And yet while I was watching it, I for the most part enjoyed it.
Good. All right.
That being said, if you were to ask me to give you point by point plot points right now, I would be at a loss. I would say that a big floating head of what Corey stole. Overall, I thought it was at least enjoyable, if problematic, and you know, there are some issues for sure. What about you?
Yeah, about the same. I think it helped that I didn't see it right away and wasn't expecting much, because it was entertaining. I thought there was a lot of funny stuff to it. And I thought visually, I thought it was way better than people said. Mm-hmm. They got really hammered on the special effects. And I think a lot of it revolved around MODOK, which, I mean, it was MODOK was super bizarre. They probably could have done him better, but with what they did, I was like, all right, at least they're leaning into the weirdness.
Yeah. Definitely comment on how.
Right. They make fun of him the whole time. So, I mean, in that way, it was good. I have a lot of little nitpicks that hardly ruin it for me. I'd sit down and watch it again. I thought it was fun enough that I would go through it again.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that really made me laugh out loud, and some performances that were better than others. There's some big problems just in terms of what they were trying to do with it and what they accomplished, but it's fine. It's a fun movie. Watch it for Kang, which is sort of what it's there for anyway. But it was fine. I enjoyed it. I wish I could give it something better than that, but
yeah. So you mentioned Kang.
Yes.
Who's been sort of positioned as the next big bad in this phase or phases of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which that's the point where we're at right now. When we talk about movies, we talk about phases. it's odd. Like, I know he had a version of him had a small almost cameo in Loki.
Yeah.
But this was sort of the big, like, general audience one that people are going to meet this character in. Mm-hmm. And Ant-Man seems like an odd franchise for them to launch this character in.
Yeah.
Just because the franchise is known for sort of, and I think in a good way, it's known for sort of smaller scale stories, a little bit more focus on comedy, of Paul Rudd as your lead. And this, they did have some funny stuff in it, but it just seemed too big for an Ant-Man movie.
It did. And I think part of that is that it feels more like a Kang movie than an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
The story was so weak in what was going on for Ant-Man. And a lot of that is reflected in the fact that none of the characters in the main Ant-Man cast show any growth in any way.
None of
there is zero change from where they started. And even the conflict that they tried to set up, which is Paul Rudd is more concerned about selling books and being a celebrity than he is helping anybody, I don't think that was reflected in anything that was set up at the start of the movie. Nothing that had like a character changing moment where he learned his lesson and became better or became a better dad or did whatever they were going for. It nothing changed.
No, that whole thing, there's like a conversation at the dinner table where his daughter had been arrested. I don't know, she was at like a protest or something.
Yeah.
And it sort of set up that she was like standing up. I don't even remember what it was. Again, it was a few weeks since I've seen it, but she was sort of standing up for the rights of somebody. And she was like, "Dad, you're, like you said, you're more concerned about this, that your image and not helping people." And I wanted to be like, okay, maybe he can take a breather after saving the universe.
Right.
Like, let's give the guy a break. Let him get a free coffee.
Yeah, but I mean, it really, besides them just like saying it, it's like the whole sense of show don't tell in movies, and they don't ever show it. They show him at a book signing and him walking around and people are smiling at him, but that doesn't show him neglecting his duties as Ant-Man. They all just sit down and say that he's kind of have not done much, but they don't even really say it that much.
Right.
I mean, they want it to be the crux of the movie, and it's not. They don't even hardly display it either way. I don't know. It was very strange.
And like you said, I don't think any of the other characters have much of an arc. Evangeline Lilly has, it seemed like, very little screen time, or at least
she had like nothing to do in the movie. From this point out, if we haven't said it, we're in spoilers, spoiler alert, but a lot of this I think falls on Peyton Reed, who is the director, who prior to doing Ant-Man movies had just done some real middle of the road comedies, nothing that that was really big. I think he did a Jim Carrey movie called Yes Man that nobody saw. He did that movie The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn that nobody saw or cared about. I mean, just a bunch of stuff that was not really much. So I don't understand. I never understood him as a director for these. The first Ant-Man movie was kind of by the book, and even that felt kind of on autopilot. Ant-Man and the Wasp, the sequel, was very enjoyable, but there just wasn't much there. I mean, it's an absolute mess of a script.
Both of those movies, I like any moment that Paul Rudd is on screen and like doing card tricks and that kind of stuff. That's the stuff I remember. But when it comes to like actual plot, like all the stuff with the ghost and Lawrence Fishburne, the second one, like I can't remember any of it.
It's not great.
But he's so that being said, Paul Rudd is funny throughout this movie. Yeah. We already care about his character from the other movies and the Endgame. And I do think Jonathan Majors, despite being in sort of a mediocre movie, I feel like he stands out and I like him as an actor. So I'm on board with him. And I think it's interesting that they took a chance on him being the big villain in these next few phases, because you had Josh Brolin as Thanos, and granted, he's not like the biggest star on the planet, but you know who he is. You've seen him in stuff. He has that gravitas, that he has got that big, deep, booming voice. So you're like, okay, I buy this. Jonathan Majors, the only thing I think I've seen him in was Lovecraft County.
County, sure. And then he was in what was the cowboy one?
Oh, The Harder They Fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in that too. So I'd only
say I agree. He's...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say I agree. He's kind of new on the scene.
Yes.
And now you're starting to see him pop up in some other things. I think he was in this new Apollo Creed movie they did, and he was in there was some World War II fighter pilot movie he did. But he's a strange choice, just being sort of unknown, but God, he knocks it out of the park. He's amazing.
Yeah. And between, so can we get into spoilers?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Have we already been in them?
Have been. Yeah.
Okay. So like I said, he does appear in Loki in the final episode, which kind of takes the steam out of the rest of the series, unfortunately. But his multiverse version of that character, and I forget what they call him. It's like the one who is left or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Is a very, very different performance than the one he does in Ant-Man, Quantumania. Yeah. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. But because the one in Loki is a lot more over the top and kind of hammy. And so I like that he can bring something different to each of those roles. And so I'm assuming that he's going to be playing more versions of this character as the series progresses.
Yeah. And then obviously we had that post-credit scene, which showed several thousand different versions of him. So that'll be interesting to see how they handle it, especially because, I mean, Loki is such a great character, but especially because it wasn't even Loki that dispensed with him in the show. It was Lady Loki, whose name I'm blanking on now. And then in this, he's basically killed, I guess, maybe, we don't know exactly, but by Ant-Man and the Wasp. So it's like, what are the stakes now? If he can go down by these couple of people, get some Avengers together and they just hammer him. So I hope that they, obviously they're building towards that, but yeah, like what do you do when there's 1,000 of them or
yeah.
So
or you get a smarter, better, stronger version of him.
Right.
So multiverse. And
yes.
Did we do an episode on Doctor Strange?
We did, yes.
Okay. So I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but
no.
I do think that between having too many shows and movies and it's starting to feel like homework, even to somebody like me in a way, and then you throw in this whole multiversal thing, do you feel like it's going to alienate audiences? Like maybe that's part of why people kept away from this. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that's been the problem since Endgame was over.
Yeah.
At all. It's just that the more into the weeds you get with it, you're going to have to start appealing to the diehard fans more than anything. Cause I think just it's too much for the average person to keep up with unless you're really invested in it. Then you just don't care. I mean, you know, I mean, how many people, like casual viewers, have sat down and watched Moon Knight and She-Hulk,
right?
And then, you know, dove into Quantumania. It's just, it's too much for people, I think. And it is going to be alienating. And it's, and the great thing is that they're still doing it with that sense of, let's not try to make it for everybody. Let's really try and make it for the people who love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that attitude that they seem to be taking with it. But the hard part is, and as we can see with Ant-Man, when it drops off in the second weekend and they don't make the money back, pretty soon the budgets are going to drop on these things. And either they're going to have to get real creative on how they do it if they want to do a good job, or they'll just start doing a bad job.
So what would you think the budget is for this?
I'm so lost on what budgets are anymore, but I mean, this was wall-to-wall special effects. I mean, every shot was a special effect.
Yeah.
Extensive. So I would guess 250, 300 million. I'm not even sure. Do you have the numbers?
Yeah, it's 200 million.
Okay.
Which still, to me, seems like so much. An Ant-Man movie.
Yeah.
But I forget what I was going to say. Just multiverse stuff. So I'm a comic book fan, mm-hmm. but I always had a hard time just jumping into just like comics, like just picking up an issue and reading it, because yeah. there had been decades upon decades, sometimes 50 years of
yeah.
mythology behind these things. And I'm like, wait, this is Cyclops's kid? What the hell's going on here? But I was always more of a fan of kind of one-offs, or just sort of, you know, six issues that they put into kind of a trade paperback that
was yeah.
kind of a more focused central story that it is. I feel like that's kind of where these movies are going, where it's just, I think about, so my oldest just turned 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like she's in an age where I can start showing her these movies. Mm-hmm. And I start thinking to myself, like, Jesus, this is going to take forever to get her caught up.
Right.
And do I have to show her Moon Knight? It's not great. So, yeah, it's a lot. But
yeah. And it is starting to get a little confusing with what the hell they're doing. Like, I know they're bringing back Daredevil in some sort of a TV show, but I don't really understand where that falls. And because obviously he popped up in another show. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen, leave it at that. But yeah, I just don't know what to think about what they're doing next.
Yeah, so, they are. Yeah, and to that point, you think about a lot of spoilers for different movies, but like Spider-Man No Way Home and Multiverse of Madness, like they start pulling in characters from movies that were made by different studios to the
yeah. point
where people, if I were to show this to Mo, Dude, like, what the fuck is going on? Why is Tobey Maguire here? Why is Patrick Stewart? Is John Krasinski going to be in other movies?
Well, and I wonder if that's going to be the selling point eventually, because obviously, like, if in Endgame, it was like literally just getting together every hero that had come up, yeah. and that was the big payoff. And this could be that the payoff is when they finally get them all together, that you do have maybe Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield show up, and maybe you do get Krasinski and Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman. I mean, who knows? I mean, it, and that might be what they're going for. I hope that that's not what they're going for, because it seems like just a rehash of what they've done before. Mm-hmm. I hope they find a better way to sort of use people. I don't know. I'm still really hopeful. I think what my biggest hope right now is just seeing the trailer for Guardians 3, because it actually looks like the quality of what has come before. And I hope that sort of gets us back on track a little bit.
And it looks like a quality movie that is focused on its characters as opposed to world building.
Right.
And we can't be pleased. like I say that and then I'm like, oh, but I loved when Patrick Stewart showed up. Like,
yeah.
Like I can be a typical like internet fanboy. And so it's almost unfair for me to be over here criticizing, because I feel like a hypocrite. But I don't know. It does feel refreshing. Yeah, like you said, to see the Guardians preview and have it be focused on them. We talked about the Christmas special they did, and that was a lot of fun too.
That was fun. Well, let's talk a little bit. I mean, we don't have a ton of time left, but let's talk a little bit about this movie a little more.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the thing with the sort of backstory on Kang with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
And I thought that was handled well, and it was interesting, and it made sense. And I thought Michelle Pfeiffer did a really nice job in this movie. I thought she was interesting and fun.
Yeah, they gave her a lot more to do. And I always like
Yeah, I do too. I was glad, nice to have her involved in this. You know who I've never loved in these movies, and this might be a hot take, as the kids say. Michael Douglas has never struck the right chord with me in these movies. He's fine. He brings a lot of classical acting to it, and big Hollywood superstar. But he just has always felt wrong in a comedy, because I don't feel like he is a very good comedian.
He can't deliver the comedy. That's very true.
Like, every line that he says that is supposed to be funny has the same cadence to it. It's kind of like dun dun dun, dun dun dun. I mean, it's just got like, I it's hard to describe, but if you listen to the way he delivers his jokey lines, it's all in just the sort of the same beats to it, and it's bizarre. It's like he just has no comic timing,
or it's just the tired now trope in these movies of he thinks Scott Lang is stupid.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he's not great. Evangeline Lilly, I don't think is a great actress, and I also feel like she's wrong for when they are going for a comedic tone in these.
Yeah, because they never really give her much funny to do, which was at least smart. What do you think about, is it Catherine Newton, who took over the role as Cassie, his daughter, in this? What do you think?
She's fine.
Yeah.
I liked her a lot in Freaky.
I did too.
I'm trying to think. I know I've seen her in something else too. Having a brain
fart, but don't know that I have. But
she's
okay. I almost wish they would have kept the young lady who played her in Endgame, although she only had about 20 seconds of screen time.
It didn't seem like they needed to recast it, but maybe. Yeah,
or switch her character so dramatically.
Yeah.
But she was okay. Everybody takes their helmets off constantly in this movie, which again, I understand because you don't want, I mean, they're in the quantum realm. It violates all of the rules of what they said about shrinking in the first movie, which was, I believe, that the oxygen molecules would be too big that you wouldn't be able to breathe without the helmet. But you can't just put all your main characters in helmets for 2 hours in a movie and never see their faces. It just would be like, you might as well not pay them at all to be there. So I understand it, but it gets a little distracting.
They also did a thing, and I'm interested to hear your take on this. Mm-hmm. They did a whole thing where Scott has to drink like a special liquid.
Yeah.
And it makes it so that he can understand what all the people and different species in the quantum realm are saying.
Yeah.
And I think they did the same thing in John Carter.
Oh, did they? Interesting.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But it's something where maybe it's just because I grew up with Star Wars, where like people understand Chewbacca and people understand Greedo, that I don't care. You don't need to spend 5 minutes on that. Like, let me believe that they all speak English. I'm good with it.
Yeah. Had they not made an issue of it, I wouldn't even thought much about it or cared.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are times that I watch things and I'm like, how are these aliens speaking English? What the hell is this shit? So I don't hate it. I mean, it got to be a little bizarre. It took up a little too much time. But I don't know. It was okay. It didn't bother me as much as maybe the deus ex machina of the hyper intelligent ants.
Yeah.
Which was sort of like when they were getting pulled into the quantum realm, you see a couple of those ants come flying in, but then it's not established until at the point that like Michael Douglas says, oh, there's also these ants here and they've been learning for years. It's like,
here's an exposition dump for you.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. Bill Murray was kind of odd and wasted.
Yeah, he's not funny.
Yeah.
It's implied that maybe he was fucking Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yep, sure was. I don't think we needed that at all, but
no. And then he's tossed. You and I are both big Bill Murray fans.
Yeah.
He's tossed to he like eats a little squid guy or something out of his drink.
Yeah.
And then they enlarge one and like they throw him to him. But you don't ever see him die. I don't know if it was purposefully ambiguous so that if they want, they can bring him back in the future, or if it was like maybe I missed something and it's like, no, he was eaten and
I couldn't quite tell. I was kind of tuned out on what was going on there at that point. Who's the other? I lost it. I had an idea, but
I do like MODOK.
Oh yeah, MODOK. We haven't talked about him much.
And I do like that they sell him as just like this weird looking thing, and they keep commenting on it, and that they really went with the design from the comic, which is just this big cube with this tiny little arms and legs hanging off. It's like Krang almost.
It really is. It's so strange, but it was funny, and I like even though I don't think Corey Stoll was the most like indelible villain of all times, I like that they thought of a way to include him in it. And it was funny, and even the kind of stupid thing about, you know, telling him not to be a dick is what turned him around was funny, and his death scene was hysterical.
He's like spitting stuff up, and they're all really grossed out.
And he does that thing where he's like, "Scott, you were always like a brother to me," and Paul Rudd's just kind of like, "Really?"
So MODOK, I thought it was successful for what it was. I think there were some, you know, diehards of the comics that were maybe upset that he wasn't used as well as he could have been. Especially that they killed him off, but I thought it was certainly a goofy and memorable part of the movie.
I had no connection to that character from the comics at all, so maybe it was sort of a to a lesser extent the Mandarin from Iron Man 3, where it was just like, all right, I'm on board with this. I don't have too much else. What else do you
have? I have a couple more thoughts about. One thing is that I understand that they can't always plan everything that they're going to do for the rest of time with these movies, but you still have to try and work a little bit in the framework of what you've done in the past. And they set up this whole thing with the second movie where they were helping the ghost lady by going into the quantum realm and collecting quantum shit or something. I don't know what it was, but something that helped her to stabilize her weird problem that she was having. And that's how Scott was there when he got trapped, when they all got dusted with the snap.
Is that what he was doing?
He was in there collecting stuff to help her, which has never been established. Like, then did she die after that, or what happened to her without this stuff? Because she's going to appear, I believe, in the Thunderbolts movie. So I don't know, like, if they've just abandoned that plot thread. Yeah. But they were going in and out of the quantum realm, you know, exploring and studying and collecting this shit. And now in this movie, the minute somebody talks about going into the quantum realm, Michelle Pfeiffer freaks out and won't tell them why. And then they're pulled in, and it's like a big problem. But they didn't establish, like, or they had established this idea that everybody was good with what they were doing with the quantum realm, and she wasn't upset about it or had a problem with it before, but all of a sudden it was an issue. So that was, again, I understand that's, they came up with a new idea and they were going to run with it to introduce Kang. Got it. No problem. I understand, but you could have done a better job with, especially they never established how, like, where they were in the quantum realm that all of a sudden there were people there, and why weren't they there before, and why didn't Michelle Pfeiffer ever tell them about this? Even she doesn't explain who Kang is till halfway through the movie, and there's really no reason for her to hide it from them once they're down there and there's the other people. I mean, it's all for dramatic effect, but it just, the effect wasn't very good.
I feel like she did a lot of, like, they're like, what's going on? And it's like, we got to move. I'll tell you when we have a moment. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, finish that action scene and then take a sec before you start buying the flying manta rays. This movie's kind of nuts. It's really all over the place. Okay, so we have not talked about, and this is maybe the most important thing.
Okay.
Oh, shit. I got to look up his name. I'm going to get there. Okay.
You can do it. I believe in you.
Ruben Rabassa.
Okay.
Is the name of the actor who works at the coffee shop.
Oh,
Ruben. Says, thank you for saving us, Spider-Man. And he is... you and I both know him as the car focus group guy from I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson on Netflix. And
if you haven't heard of that show, I Think You Should Leave, look it up. And even if you don't get into the whole thing, watch that skit with Ruben and the car focus group. He's amazing.
I can't remember if it was you or Matt who sent me something. I feel like it was on Reddit that was an interview with Paul Rudd, and the interviewer brings up that actor, and Paul Rudd immediately recognizes that he's the guy from I Think You Should Leave. And it was like, I'm so glad you asked me this question. When I first met him, I was so excited, and it made me love Paul Rudd that much more. But
yeah.
Anyway,
you know who was really missing from this movie was Luis.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, I understand it would have been hard to shoehorn those other three characters into this. I think that Michael Pena could have figured out how to bring him into it. But I think of the other guys, is it T.I. who played the one guy? I think he had some legal issues between movies and we might not be hearing from him again.
Oh.
And then David Desmalchian, I'm not sure how we say his name. Who played the other one of their guys was actually the voice of that weird gelatin thing that he had to drink the liquid from.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So they did sort of bring him back, even though he wasn't the same character, but that was one of my favorite things about the Ant-Man movies was just Michael Pena doing the fast talking recaps of things.
I mean, that could have been the post-credit scene one of the post-credit scenes where Scott had told Luis, like, kind of what went down in the quantum realm and just had him do the rapid fire explaining what happened. Yeah.
Those are so funny. But yeah, he was sorely missed, I felt. The other thing, so the one thing that I would say that I almost got really excited thinking that they were on track with something was that Kang was appealing to Scott to help him steal back this or retrieve this core that ran his ship. And he said he needed his help because he was a thief. And I thought, oh, they're actually going to bring this full circle and turn this into a little bit of a heist. And they might have some thing where he really has to use his skills that, you know, it was kind of like the idea of stripping Spider-Man down from the fancy suit to his homemade suit to really bring him back to who he was.
Yeah.
Character. And I thought, oh, they're going to do that with him. And while the mission he sent him on was very entertaining with like the 1,000 Scots. It was not, there was nothing about it that involved him being a thief or needing to use the skills of a thief. It was just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
So I was very excited at that point, and I thought, oh, this is where it's all going to come together. And then it really did not. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy that scene where there's all the different Ant-Men and that one of them was just Paul Rudd is Baskin Robbins.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that despite how big and kind of epic and Star Warsy this movie could get in terms of just like there was literally an alien cantina scene.
Yeah.
There were these moments of levity and humor that the other movies had that were the best part of those movies.
Yeah.
It was just, there wasn't enough of that. And it's, again, I'm hypocritical because I'm like, they need to do different things and try different stuff. And it's like, but actually I just wanted what the other movies had that was good. Yeah. I can't be pleased, but
we'll see. But I don't think that it's so much that I like that they did some different things. Mm-hmm. I like that they did something with Quantum Realm, and I like that they threw MODOK in there and that they mix it up some, and I even like that they gave such a big important story to such an odd and minor character as Ant-Man. I just wish they did it better. I just wish that they had taken a little bit of time to make the script something and say, okay, well, we can't just make this Kang's introduction. We need to give these characters something more to grow on. And maybe there was more. I know they film a lot and have to edit it down. But yeah, like I said, that introduction to how Scott had changed was nothing. There was nothing there as to why he had to find himself in this movie. And then he never found himself. It was just, if they had just given us that, it would have been all right. Oh, and again, I don't know if this is the director or the writing or where this comes from, but there were no consequences really to, like, for the example, when when Wasp comes back through that portal at the end to save him and they get rid of Kang, and you're like, oh shit, now they're stuck there again and what's going to happen? But the portal just immediately reopens and you're like, well, why was this even an issue?
I had that exact thought. Like the stakes of him sort of sacrificing himself to stop Kang,
mm-hmm.
knowing that he was going to be stuck there, it's like, nope, he's yeah. rescued, they go back, no big deal.
Yeah, that could have been the character growth that they were going for, but
take that.
Yeah, weird. I don't know. Again, it's a fun movie and I'm glad it's there, and it's hopefully it all fits well into the rest of this, but I feel like we're increasingly saying that it's just like, well, it was okay and I hope that it all leads somewhere. But you can only say that for so long before you start to doubt that it's going to lead anywhere. But
increasingly, these movies are mediocre movies with little bright spots in them. Thor, yeah. Love and Thunder had that same mm-hmm. problem where Christian Bale was, I think, a pretty great villain. There were a few standout kind of sequences. I like Russell Crowe as Zeus, big fat Zeus. but the movie overall just wasn't great. And it keeps me from revisiting movies as often as I would with movies from previous phases. But
yeah. Well, I guess that's about all we can say about Quantumania. It's so stupid. I guess that's about it, Rob. I guess we'll wrap it up. If anybody's looking for us online, where can they do it?
We're on Twitter at Two Geeks Movies. We're on Facebook, where you can like us, and you can catch us in Apple Podcasts, Podomatic, Stitcher, and I think Spotify.
All right.
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us, and we will catch you next time on Two Geeks at the Movies.
Bye, folks.
Bye.